This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Oh my God, it's been the longest off season ever. We've got a deal. We've got no deal. We've got a fight. We've got a lot of fighting. Now we're making up. No, we're fighting again. We have a deal. No deal. Close to a deal. We'll have baseball. Don't worry.
But one way or the other, we're playing Major League Baseball.
If I get the Rona, on top of that, if I get the Rona, guess what happens with that? Bro, I'm risking my life.
I don't want to get it. So therefore, I'm stuck here with Wilson with no end in sight.
Wilson! Wilson!
So what are they doing, Joe? What are they doing?
Joe Ostrowski, nights on 670 The Score.
Not the usual format. We'll be bringing in a terrific guest in just a couple of minutes. David Sampson from CBS Sports will drop by. Probably know him as the former president of the Miami Marlins. At 8:20, our early odds segment will be with Mitch Armantrout. Covers gaming for the Chicago Sun-Times. Got big news. Big news. So people are going to stop asking me, when are the Illinois casinos opening up? Because they're opening up on Wednesday. Wednesday, July 1. So on Wednesday, the casinos are going to open. Not sure what it's going to look like. So I want to talk to Mitch a little bit about that. If it's anything like Indiana, you'll see maybe 25%. Capacity. You'll see plexiglass everywhere if you want to go. I don't think I'm going to go. Maybe I should go so I can report back to you guys on Wednesday night about my experience, but I don't think I'm all that interested in going to a casino the second it opens. If it's anything like Indiana last week, there's going to be a long line going down the street before I could even get in, but I am curious what it's going to look like. Anyways, we'll talk to Mitch about that. Score Rewind for the 9 o'clock hour. The Cubs made some news on the station today. For them to go public with this, and we're hearing from other teams, there was a report on this station about the White Sox. We're hearing about the Astros, Rangers, Marlins maybe, 20% fans. I mean, during those negotiations, we were hearing no fans. Oh, well, we can't go back to that March 26th agreement because we're not going to have any fans. And it's so much revenue day of game. Nope, that's not happening. So it looks like they're at least going to try from the start to have a 20% capacity. Save your White Sox jokes, please. They are extremely lame. So there was that coming from Crane Kenny's interview on the Dan Bernstein Show today. And then also the other thing, of course, Comcast. I mean, that's top of mind if you have Comcast like I do. It doesn't sound like a whole lot has changed. Now, he said that their last exchange of numbers was on Friday. Talks are progressing. Expect a deal to be done. But we've heard all of that throughout this. So we'll see if something actually gets done between the two sides. So let's go out to the Alpamonte Ford hotline. Shop over 500 new and used vehicles at Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. David Sampson joins me on 670 The Score, former president of the Miami Marlins, host of Nothing Personal with David Sampson. That's his podcast. You could see his video, some of his work on CBS Sports HQ. How you doing, David?
Good. How are you tonight?
I'm doing great. Appreciate you taking the time to join me this evening. So I was just talking about the big news of the day locally. Crane Kenny came on the station, head of business ops, as you know, for the Cubs, and they were talking about fans, and it's not just the Cubs. Over the last few days, we're hearing reports about Astros, Marlins, I believe the Marlins, right? You're still in Florida, right?
I am in Florida. I'm inside because the Florida's become a bit of a petri dish at the moment.
Oh, my goodness. Man, yeah, we're getting bad report after bad report involving the NBA. But what is your reaction when you start to hear, as soon as opening day is set, now we're hearing, oh, wait, we might have fans when we start baseball on the 24th?
Well, there is definitely incentive on behalf of all the owners to get fans into the ballpark because the way that the season is now shaping up with 60 games, they're losing a lot of money. Whether you believe they're losing money or not, I can tell you I've been in the room. I've been in the chair for 18 years. Every one of the 30 teams will lose money this year playing 60 games. So to the extent that you can get some of that revenue back in the form of ticket sales, in the form of corporate sponsorships and suite sales and parking and food and beverage and merchandise, you're going to do it. And you're going to try to make sure that you're as careful as you can. But if there are fans out there who don't care or are just willing to take the chance, baseball will take advantage of that for sure.
Last month on a call with Cubs season ticket holders, Tom Ricketts said that 70% of the Cubs' revenue was day of game. Tickets, parking, concessions, all the stuff that you were just mentioning. What was it like for you when you were with the Marlins? What kind of number was it?
Oh, if I were you, I'd bet the under for me. Because the majority of our revenue came from revenue sharing. Teams like the Cubs and the Dodgers and the Yankees, who had so much local revenue that they would share that with teams like the Rays and the Marlins, et cetera. So our biggest amount of revenue came from that. Our gate revenue was absolutely horrific, and which I guess is why I don't have a job anymore. But it was it's difficult to get fans in Miami, and the average ticket price is way lower than it is in Chicago. The per cap spend by fans is lower here than it is in Chicago. So I absolutely believe that from a team standpoint, 70% of his revenue is from the gate. However, if you add a broadcast revenue components and owning a network and the revenue that comes into that network, then the overall revenue would not be that 70-30 split.
And of course, the Cubs starting their own network right now. And that's been a battle that's been going on, David, behind the scenes. Comcast, the biggest carrier in Illinois, definitely in the Chicago area, they do not have the marquee network, and now we're a few weeks away from baseball.
It's something that's going to be an issue. The Dodgers, for the first time, are going to be on all across L.A., and they've been having these sort of network fights for, God, it's got to be five or six years at least, ever since really the Guggenheim partners took over, Mark Walter and Stan Kasten and that group took over. So from my standpoint, the Cubs cannot make a deal where they are not getting the revenue they projected to get because they've got debt on the new network. There were tremendous startup expenses. So I understand why they're having this fight. The fans lose at the end of the day if it's not if a deal is not done, but it's not an easy fix at all.
We've heard that, like the NBA, baseball plans on continuing play even when we get the positive tests, and there's going to be reports every single day once we get to next week and all these players report to camp and they're all tested. In this era of social distancing, and we see that teams can invite as many as 60 players, do you expect the majority of the teams to invite that many?
I expect all the players, all the teams to invite that many because that's the total pool that you have for your entire season. And I think the injuries are going to mount this year because spring training is so much shorter. It's been a full off season, and it's not as though these players have been having their normal off season workouts. So they're going to come into spring. They can say they're ready to throw 98 miles an hour and go six innings, or that they don't need a bunch of at bats, that they can do three regular spring training games and BP and inter-squad games, and they'll be good to go. But my experience tells me that you're going to have some hamstring issues. You're going to have some oblique issues. You're going to have some shoulder and elbow soreness. I think the 10-day IL will be used extensively. I think the 45-day IL is definitely going to be more active this year. So you're going to need all of the reinforcements you can have. And that's whether you're the Cubs or the Marlins, it won't make a difference.
With David Sampson, former Marlins president, here on Sports Radio 670 The Score. Follow David on Twitter at David P. Sampson. Is it likely that we will still see the expanded playoffs?
Well, right now, as you know, there is no deal in place for expanded playoffs, but I know that the owners are going back to the players because they want the expanded playoffs, because when you can sell an extra round, you make more money because you get rights for that extra round. From a scheduling standpoint, the question is, will the networks be willing to show that extra round? Would they be willing to have the World Series a little later than it was scheduled to be? That's a big wait to see for me. From a player standpoint, I see no reason why they would agree to expanded playoffs without some sort of revenue share of that expanded playoffs, which the owners aren't going to give, without some sort of increased payment in the postseason pool, which I'm not sure the owners are going to give. So especially with the spikes in COVID right now and the real question about whether or not the season is going to happen, because you could have a team with multiple players testing positive, I'm just not sure they're going to be able to come to an agreement on expanded playoffs for this year.
What do you suspect the trade market will look like as we get closer to August 31st, assuming that there isn't any missed time?
Yeah, for me, as president of a team, I'm telling my GM the following. Number one, we're not taking on a penny. I don't care if we're in first place or last place. We cannot afford to lose more money. So if you want to make a trade and you can move the salary or not have to pay the salary of the player you're bringing in, then I guess I'm okay with it. But are you really going to give up a lot of young players? And the GM will tell me, well, wait a minute, what's our payroll next year? And I'll say, I have no idea. I don't know whether there'll be fans. I don't know what the economic recovery will be like in the country. So I can't promise you what the payroll will be. So you better not give up your good young players to go for it in this 60-game season. So I just can't see a scenario where there'll be a lot of trade activity. If I'm the Cubs, I'm not trading Chris Bryant right now because I'm not going to get the type of return that makes it worth it to trade Chris Bryant right now. And they had a window and missed it. And now I think you're going to see him held on through this season at least.
That's the big question with the Cubs, too. What's going to happen in a couple of off seasons when Bryant's up, Baez, and also Schwarber? If you're the Cubs, would you look at keeping all of those guys and let them go out and test the market?
Yeah, to me, I would keep every one of my free agents to be and let them test the market when it's done, because I know the market is going to be different. And this is not in any way penalizing players for the way they behave during this negotiation. It's not anything other than recognizing the future economic uncertainty that the industry, as well as many industries, are facing right now. Why would the Phillies, for example, sign JT Realmuto, who I know so well from Florida, the best catcher in the game and a better guy than he is a catcher? You're going to give him Joe Mauer money or Buster Posey money? There's no chance. If I'm the Cubs, I can't start negotiating with Boris and figure out where Bryant should be in free agency, because I don't know what the market's like. The days of 10-year, $300 million deals for me are over. And if I'm the Cubs, I want to see what happens with Mookie Betts this offseason. I want to see how other teams are reacting to top-of-the-line free agents before I would start engaging with Chris Bryant.
We're all taking guesses here, and you already mentioned you don't know what the budget would be for next season if you were still running a team. What do you think it's going to be like in a couple of years, in 3 years? How long are we talking?
So when we would put payrolls together with the Marlins, we would have 1 year, 3 year, and 5 year payrolls. And we would watch our young players get more expensive as the years went on. We would take out, using our best guess, take out certain players after a certain number of years of arbitration, put in free agents, let's say at $2 million or $6 million or $8 million. So we would put together what we thought would be a payroll going forward based on our modeling that we would do on the finance side, where we expected season ticket revenue to go, what we thought we could do with prices of season tickets, where we were with our broadcast deals, where we were with our corporate sponsorship deals. So there's all sorts of factors that go in. And when you're modeling now for a team and you're the Cubs, I don't know how you do it accurately because, as I said, you just don't know. Therefore, I'm not willing to go to Ricketts if I'm Crane Kenny and say, all right, Tom, here's what we should do. We can definitely have room for Bryant at 5 years, $25 million a year. At least we can maybe go with Baez as well, but we should trade Schwarber. I just don't think that that's the position Kenny's going to be in.
David, the other day I had former GM Dan Evans on the show, and we were talking about future free agent markets, and he brought up that he thought maybe there will be some teams that will pay for the high-end guys, like you just mentioned Mookie Betts or Baez or Bryant, to create a buzz because they might be working to get fans back to the stadium. Are you selling that idea?
No, not even close. And if I had a GM who tried to sell that idea, I would fire him. So that is not what you do. And I know it because I've tried it. I've tried signing free agents like a Jose Reyes or a Mark Burley to try to create buzz, or a Carlos Delgado. I mean, we've tried it all, tried to re-sign Giancarlo Stanton. Everybody tries to do that. It doesn't work anywhere. Once in a while, you get a player who can move the needle. But in my lifetime, it's been Dontrell Willis and Jose Fernandez, and that's it. And when I look at other teams, Mike Trout signs that huge extension. I'm not sure people were lining up to buy Angel season tickets because they extended Mike Trout or because they signed Anthony Rendon. Is it better to get the best players you can and then win? Of course that's better. But in terms of creating a buzz by overpaying a free agent, I've been there and it does not work.
David, did you hear anything about Scott Boras' involvement in the final hours with all this stuff?
Yeah, he was completely involved. And if he tells you he wasn't, he's just not telling you the truth. He was so behind the scenes, pulling strings from the union standpoint and making sure that his agenda was being followed that everyone knew it. That's why no one cared. So the commissioner's office knew it. Other agents knew it. The players knew it. The owners knew it. And that's been going on, and that's sort of how he operates. But again, it really does not do much to advance the cause of baseball. It doesn't do much to advance the possibility of an agreement. It does nothing, I guess, just to help grow an ego, but it's not a secret that I'm telling you right now within the industry.
David, I saw your opinion about LeBron James and the unfair advantage, and I completely agree with you. I was talking about this a month or so ago when we were starting to hear the teams were getting together and having practices, and not everybody has that ability. I wouldn't have gone as far as you, but I do agree. It's a completely an unfair advantage, depending on the state you're in.
Yeah, I was making a point, and I'm going to stand by my point, which is PEDs. Why do people do that? To get an advantage. Why did the Astros bang trash cans? To get an advantage. For an NBA team to practice together, they get an advantage. It's a competitive advantage. Believe me, it's not bad for your health, I guess, given COVID it may be. So it's not like steroids in that way. It doesn't violate the oath sort of that players have within themselves about stealing signs and having the Astros gone too far, and that's why players were angry. But for the NBA purposes, I'll tell you right now, rhythm and momentum are everything. And after an off season, which is what the NBA has had right now, how do you know if the Bucks' rhythm is going to be back or the Clippers' rhythm the way they were playing? And if you have a chance to keep your team together and have them play and keep that rhythm, boy, that is a huge competitive advantage. That was my only point.
You're down in Florida. How do you think this works with NBA bubble basketball? Brian Scalabrine is on the station this morning, and he's like, yeah, you're going to get positive tests inside that bubble.
It's a guarantee. And what the NBA has said and what MLB and what the other sports are saying is that they're willing to live with a certain number of positive tests. The real question that we have to wait to see is what happens when six members of the Clippers test positive and have to be isolated, and they've got a playoff game the following day and the following day and the following day. That does really hurt sort of the credibility of the product. All these positive tests prior to training camp and prior to games being played, they're not good because they're bad for the long-term health of the player potentially, and they're not good because it shows that the virus is not under control and players are not necessarily following the social distancing protocols like everybody else. But now, if you have to measure it versus later, now is better than later.
David, love the strong opinions. Appreciate your time tonight.
Look forward to the next time. Have a great day.
Absolutely. David Sampson, former president of the Miami Marlins. Check out his podcast, Nothing Personal with David Sampson. And you can see him on CBS Sports HQ on Twitter at David P. Sampson.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.